Imagine a chemical that can just, completely erase your memory. Like it shuts down your brain's ability to distinguish fact from fiction and plunges you into this waking nightmare.
Yeah, it's terrifying to even think about.
Right. I mean, you probably assume a substance like that is locked away deep inside some high security bioweapons lab somewhere. You certainly wouldn't expect to find it growing casually at your local garden center, or for that matter, inside a little adhesive patch you buy at the pharmacy before taking a cruise.
Exactly. I mean, it is one of the most profound paradoxes in modern pharmacology. We are looking at a plant family that produces a chemical capable of entirely overriding human consciousness.
Literally overriding it.
Yeah, completely. Yet we routinely use that exact same mechanism to treat motion sickness and pioneer new frontiers in neuroscience. It's wild.
It really is. So today we are pulling apart a comprehensive new article from the OOTW Journal. This was actually published today, July 13th, 2026, and it's titled Datura and Scopolamine, the Neuroscience.
It's a fantastic piece of research.
It really is. And our mission for this deep dive is to figure out how a single chemical mechanism in the human brain can be manipulated to trigger a literal nightmare of delirium and amnesia, while also acting as a foundational tool in Alzheimer's research. Okay, let's unpack this, because for you listening, this deep dive is going to fundamentally change how you view the plants in your neighborhood and, well, the fragile chemistry of your own memory.
Yeah, I think to really grasp the sheer scale of the contradiction here, we have to start by establishing what this plant, Datura, and its active compounds actually do to human perception. Because it's not what people think.
No, not at all.
The medical literature draws a very hard line here. This is absolutely not a psychedelic.
Right, and the sources make a massive point of this distinction. Datura belongs in a category completely apart. It is classified strictly as a deliriant.
Which is a crucial distinction to make.
Exactly. When people talk about taking classic psychedelics, like LSD or psilocybin or even a dissociative like ketamine, there's almost always some persistent thread of insight that remains intact.
Right. Like on a classic psychedelic, the user generally knows they are intoxicated. I mean, they might see the walls breathing or experience intense visual distortions, but there is still an observing self witnessing that effect.
They know it's the drug.
Exactly. They understand it as a drug-induced alteration of reality. They haven't lost touch with the fact that reality still exists.
But Datura completely severs that thread. It produces a true delirium.
Right.
We're talking about hallucinations that are fully formed and indistinguishable from the real world.
And that's the scary part.
Yeah, I mean, the case studies in the article describe people having hour-long conversations with friends who aren't even in the room, or, sitting on a couch smoking a completely invisible cigarette.
Just totally disconnected from what's actually happening.
Right. And the most terrifying part is the dense anterograde amnesia. The experience is usually confusing, utterly terrifying, and by the next morning, the person's brain hasn't recorded a single second of it.
Yeah, it is the clinical equivalent of the extreme delirium you might see in, say, an ICU patient battling a severe infection. But it's just synthesized naturally in a plant.
So if a psychedelic is like knowing you're playing a wild virtual reality game, Datura is like someone super gluing the headset to your face and erasing your memory that VR even exists.
That's a really good way to put it.
You just think you're in the real world and you are totally trapped in it.
What's fascinating here is that this distinction replacing reality entirely rather than enhancing it is exactly what makes delirience uniquely dangerous. You aren't just sitting quietly having a profound internal journey.
Right, you're up and moving around.
Yeah, you are interacting with a phantom world. You might walk into traffic because you see a bridge that isn't there, or react violently to a perceived physical threat. You are completely divorced from your physical environment.
Which naturally makes you wonder why humans haven't universally run screaming from this plant. Because, I mean, looking at the historical record, our ancestors have been actively experimenting with this stuff for millennia.
Oh, they definitely didn't run from it. They actually revered it. So Datura belongs to the nightshade family, the Solanaceae. This includes the Datura stramonium, which is commonly called Jimson weed, as well as the Brumensia tree, those really beautiful weeping trumpet flowers.
Oh, yeah, you see those everywhere.
Right. They were actually split from the Datura genus in 1973. But the family also includes deadly nightshade, or belladonna, henbane, and mandrake.
And despite growing in totally different parts of the world, they all share the exact same active chemistry, right?
These molecules called tropane alkaloids.
Yes, specifically hyoscyamine, atropine, and the one that's most potent in the central nervous system, which is scopolamine.
Right.
Now, Albert Ledenberg first isolated scopolamine in 1880. But ancient cultures mapped the effects of these alkaloids long before modern chemistry even existed. Like, the Chumash people in Southern California used datura, which they called toloach, and highly structured male initiation rites. Okay, wait, I have to stop you there. If the dose that gives you a vision and the dose that literally stops your heart are notoriously close together, how on earth did a primitive society measure it safely without just killing their initiates?
Well, it required immense, specialized generational knowledge.
Wow.
Yeah, the elders preparing the toloach meticulously controlled the dosage by using specific parts of the plant, harvested at very specific times of the year, and carefully titrating the liquid. They understood the razor-thin margin of error through centuries of observation.
That is incredible.
It is. But over in Europe, the approach to these same nightshades led to a very different kind of cultural phenomena, medieval flying ointments.
Yes, this part of the article is wild. People would actually render these nightshade plants into animal fat to create salves.
Right, because they figured out that the human digestive tract is a rough place for these alkaloids. Eating the plant often caused fatal poisoning.
Yeah, that margin of error again.
Exactly. But if you rub a fat-based ointment infused with datura or belladonna on the skin, the tropane alkaloids absorb transdermally.
Wait, so medieval folks basically figured out transdermal drug delivery just to feel like they were flying on broomsticks?
Yeah. That is the literal origin of the witch on a broomstick mythology.
That is just crazy to me.
The transdermal absorption of scopolamine and atropine caused intense physiological sensations of levitation and flight. And that was combined with that vivid, indistinguishable from reality delirium we talked about.
That is incredible. But let's look under the hood here for a second. We know what these plants did to ancient cultures and supposed witches. But what is the actual biological mechanism causing this complete chemical chaos in the brain?
Right. Well, the mechanism is elegant but devastating. Tropane alkaloids are competitive antagonists at muscarinic acetylcholine receptors.
Okay, let's break that down for the listener really quick. A competitive antagonist essentially means the drug races, the brain's natural neurotransmitter, acetylcholine, to the receptor site, right? It basically sits in the chair and blocks the natural chemical from doing its job.
Yeah, that's a great way to picture it. And the reason these specific molecules are so good at this comes down to their structure. Scopolamine and atropine are lipophilic tertiary emuanes.
Okay, that sounds like a massive mouthful of chemistry. What does that actually mean for the human body?
Well, lipophilic just means they dissolve easily in fats. Now, the brain is protected by the blood-brain barrier, which is essentially a strict biological bouncer that keeps water-soluble toxins out.
Right, it keeps the bad stuff away from the brain.
Exactly. But because scopolamine is fat-soluble, it slips right past the bouncer. It doesn't just stay in the bloodstream, it completely permeates the brain's control centers.
And once it gets in, it shuts down central cholinergic signaling, heavily targeting the M1 receptors in the cortex and hippocampus. And those specific receptors dictate your attention and your perceptual gating, which is basically how your brain filters the sensory data of reality.
Yes, exactly.
You switch those off, the filter breaks down, and you get the hallucinations and amnesia.
Right. But the blockade isn't just happening in the brain. It hits muscarinic receptors all over the body, which creates this massive systemic physical reaction known in toxicology as the anticholinergic toxidrome.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the physical effects are so pronounced that an ER doctor can spot a datura poisoning from across the room. There's actually a medical rhyme they use to memorize the symptoms, right?
There is. Yeah, the classic ER rhyme maps perfectly to the mechanism of blocking acetylcholine. It starts with blind as a bat.
Because of the pupils.
Exactly. Acetylcholine is required to constrict your pupils. So if you block it, the pupils dilate completely, making it impossible to focus. Next is mad as a hatter, which refers to that central delirium in the brain we just discussed.
Then there's red as a beet and hot as a hare.
Right. So acetylcholine is the specific chemical messenger that tells your sweat glands to turn on. When scopolamine unplugs that connection, you stop sweating entirely.
Oh, that's bad.
Very bad.
Yeah.
Your body's cooling system shuts down, causing extreme hyperthermia, so hot as a hare. Then your blood vessels dilate near the skin surface, desperately trying to radiate that trap heat, which turns the skin flushed and red as a beet.
Man. And the next one is dry as a bone, which makes sense because you need acetylcholine to produce saliva and tears.
Yep, severe dry mouth.
But the last two sound incredibly dangerous. The bowel and bladder lose their tone, and the heart runs alone.
Yeah, so losing their tone means the smooth muscles of your digestive and urinary tracts become paralyzed. But the heart runs alone is the really critical one. Normally, your vagus nerve acts as a constant brake on your heart, keeping your resting heart rate slow and steady.
Like an idle on a car.
Exactly. And it uses acetylcholine to apply that brake. When atropine or scopolamine block those receptors, it's like cutting the brake line on a car. The heart rate accelerates dangerously, running completely uncontrolled.
So you have this terrifying full-body toxidrome going on. But I want to circle back to the brain for a second, because that precise blockade, the thing causing the MAD as a hatter delirium, is heavily focused on erasing memory. And this leads us to its most important scientific application.
Yeah, this is where a deadly poison becomes an indispensable medical tool. Acetylcholine is the fundamental neurotransmitter for laying down new memories. It activates a biological process in the hippocampus called long-term potentiation.
Can we explain long-term potentiation simply for the listeners who maybe aren't neuroscientists?
Yeah, sure. Think of it as the physical process of learning. When you experience something new, neurons fire in a specific pattern. Long-term potentiation is the strengthening of those microscopic connections between neurons so that the pattern becomes permanent.
Okay.
It's how short-term experiences become long-term memories. Scopolamine prevents those connections from strengthening.
So if acetylcholine is your brain's record button, taking Datura or scopolamine is like violently ripping the power cord out of the recording studio. The band is still playing, you're still walking and talking, but absolutely nothing is making it onto the tape.
That is a flawless analogy, yes.
Yeah.
And because scopolamine induces this reversible memory impairment so predictably, it became the textbook pharmacological model of amnesia.
Really?
Yeah. When neuroscientists want to screen a new anti-dementia drug, they will actually administer scopolamine to healthy volunteers to temporarily wipe out their short-term memory function. Then they test if the new drug can reverse the deficit.
Which forms the backbone of how we understand Alzheimer's disease.
Exactly. It's a load-bearing pillar of the cholinergic hypothesis of Alzheimer's disease. Researchers realize that in dementia patients, the specific neurons that produce acetylcholine are degenerating. So the earliest FDA-approved Alzheimer's drugs, like Donepezil, were designed to do the exact opposite of Datura.
Oh, that makes sense.
Right. Where Datura blocks acetylcholine, Donepezil prevents the breakdown of acetylcholine, leaving more of it in the brain.
And the article notes this mechanism is still yielding breakthroughs today. Like, in 2024, the FDA approved a drug called Cobenfy for schizophrenia. It's a muscarinic M1 and M4 agonist. So instead of blocking those receptors, it stimulates them, yielding pro-cognitive, antipsychotic effects.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's one biological system manipulated in two opposite directions, yielding entirely different realities for the patient. But medical science didn't stop at research. They actually turned these toxic alkaloids into everyday therapies you might have in your medicine cabinet right now.
Like the motion sickness patch? If you've ever gone deep sea fishing and slapped a little circular patch behind your ear, you were willingly absorbing scopolamine.
Yep. Approved by the FDA back in 1979. That patch delivers a microscopic, precisely controlled dose of scopolamine over 3 days.
Just a tiny amount.
Just enough. The dose is tiny enough that it reaches the muscarinic receptors in the brainstem's vomiting center, turning off the nausea trigger, without flooding the cortex and causing the amnesia or the delirium.
And atropine, the other major alkaloid in Datura, is quite literally on the crash cart in every emergency room across the country.
It is an indispensable frontline drug. Like if a patient is brought in with profound bradycardia, which is a dangerously slow heart rate, an injection of atropine removes that vagal brake we talked about earlier, speeding the heart back up.
Wow.
But even more dramatically, it is the standard life-saving antidote for nerve agent or organophosphate poisoning.
Organophosphates are found in common agricultural pesticides, right?
Yes. And in chemical warfare, agents like sarin gas. These agents work by destroying the enzyme that cleans up acetylcholine. So the victim's nervous system is suddenly flooded with a massive lethal excess of acetylcholine, causing endless muscle spasms and respiratory failure.
So to save them, you administer a massive dose of atropine to block the receptors and shield the body from the flood. It's literally like fighting chemical fire with chemical fire.
Exactly.
And at the other end of the spectrum, at a 0.01% dose, ophthalmologists use atropine drops to safely slow down childhood myopia. But I have to bring up the more controversial science in the sources, specifically regarding depression.
Ah, yeah. The antidepressant research is a fascinating lesson in the complexities of modern trial design. So back in 2006, and again in 2010, researchers at the National Institutes of Health published papers suggesting that an intravenous dose of scopolamine acted as a rapid antidepressant.
Really? Just a rapid reset?
That was the theory. The idea was that giving the brain's cholinergic system a sudden disruptive shock could rapidly reboot a patient's mood. It's somewhat similar to how ketamine is used today.
But if scopolamine resets the brain's cholinergic system so powerfully, why did the massive 2022 clinical trial fall flat on its face?
It comes down to the placebo effect and the flaw of unblinding. So in the early trials, the placebo group got saline. But remember, scopolamine makes your mouth incredibly dry and speeds up your heart.
Oh, so they knew they had the drug.
Exactly. The patients who got the real drug instantly knew they had been given something powerful, while the saline group knew they hadn't. That psychological realization alone can skew depression scores.
So for the 2022 trial, they fixed that by using an active placebo.
Exactly right. They used a drug called glycopyrrolate. Glycopyrrolate blocks the exact same muscarinic receptors in the body, causing the dry mouth and the elevated heart rate. But crucially, its molecular structure is not lipophilic.
So it cannot cross the blood-brain barrier.
Right. The patients felt all the physical side effects, believing they got the experimental brain drug, but their brains were completely untouched by scopolamine.
Wow. And when they controlled for that placebo effect?
The trial had to be stopped for futility. The rapid antidepressant effect just vanished. A subsequent 2023 systematic review looked at all available data and found the evidence mixed at best.
It's important to state for you listening that we are just reporting on the current scientific consensus as of 2026. The rapid antidepressant signal from the early days is highly contested and hasn't replicated well under rigorous active placebo conditions. It is not an approved therapy.
Yeah, it really highlights how slippery these neurochemical mechanisms are to tame. And unfortunately, while doctors try to harness scopolamine for healing, criminals recognized the power of this biological backdoor a long time ago.
Right. I mean, if you can medically induce a state where a person is awake, highly compliant, and totally incapable of forming memories, that is a criminal's dream. This brings us to the urban legends of Devil's Breath, or Burundanga, heavily associated with Colombia, where scopolamine is extracted from the Brugmansia tree.
This raises an important question. How do we separate the very real pharmacological dangers from the sensationalized media panic? Because there's a lot of both.
The reality is definitely terrifying enough. I mean, the medical literature fully documents victims having their food or drinks spiked with scopolamine. Because it blocks those perceptual gating receptors, the victims become disoriented and highly suggestible.
Yes.
They might help criminals empty their own bank accounts, and because the record button is unplugged, they wake up the next day with absolutely zero memory of the crime.
The profound anterograde amnesia and compliance are very real, but toxicologists constantly have to debunk the Hollywood myths surrounding it. The viral idea that someone can just blow a magical powder in your face on the street or hand you a drug-laced business card and you instantly become a mind-controlled zombie.
Right, that's just a myth.
It is. That simply isn't how the pharmacokinetics work. It requires oral ingestion and time to cross into the bloodstream and actually reach the brain.
It's crazy how much lore surrounds the idea of chemical compliance. Like, the original concept of truth serum was actually based on this exact drug.
Okay.
In the early 20th century, an obstetrician named Robert House noticed that women given scopolamine for twilight sleep during childbirth would answer questions without hesitation. He actually proposed it for police interrogations.
Which was completely debunked by the scientific community. It doesn't make a person tell the truth. It just makes them babble without inhibition.
Right.
Subjects under scopolamine give highly unreliable fantasy-laced answers because they are in a state of active delirium. They literally don't know what reality is, so their answers are useless for getting at the truth.
Okay, so given all of this, the terrifying reality of spiked drinks, the intense medical utility in emergency rooms, and the sheer toxicity of the plant itself, how on earth is this substance treated by law today?
The legal framework is a massive, almost ironic mismatch. First, consider the actual hazard. The alkaloid content in a wild Datura or Brugmansia plant varies wildly depending on the season, the soil, and even the specific leaf. This creates a perilously narrow margin of safety.
Meaning there's zero way to measure a safe dose of a wild leaf.
None at all.
The amount that causes a recreational delirium and the amount that triggers fatal hyperthermia and seizures are separated by a microscopic margin.
And if you cross that line, you end up in the ER needing a specific antidote. The article notes doctors use physostigmine, or recently, off-label rivastigmine, due to drug shortages. These are drugs that forcefully raise your acetylcholine levels to overcome the scopolamine blockade.
Oh, wow.
But here is the legal contradiction. If you isolate purified scopolamine or atropine in a laboratory, they are heavily regulated, prescription-only drugs. But the plants themselves, Datura and Brugmansia, are entirely unregulated at the federal level in the United States.
So what does this all mean? It means one of the most dangerous, reality-erasing deliriants on the planet is perfectly legal to buy at a garden center. Now, the sources do note that Kansas bans the Datura stramonium species outright, and Louisiana bans it specifically for human consumption, but federally. It's treated with the same legal scrutiny as a tomato plant.
Which is exactly why non-sensational education, like the OOTW journal piece, is so vital. It's not a scheduled drug of abuse, but it's a profound neurotoxin, if mishandled, sitting right in our backyards.
It really is a chemical of extremes. Just to recap the sheer whiplash of the science we've covered today, Datura and scopolamine exist as a sacred, ancient entheogen used in rites of passage.
Yeah.
They serve as a vital neuroscience tool that paved the way for Alzheimer's treatments. They're the medicine in a mundane motion sickness patch, and they're a deadly emergency room poison. And every single one of those outcomes stems from manipulating just one specific receptor type in the human brain.
It's a humbling reminder of how delicate our neurochemistry actually is. So for you listening, the next time you are walking down the street and you see one of those beautiful, pendulous, trumpet-shaped flowers hanging over a neighbor's garden fence, know that you aren't just looking at a pretty weed. You are looking at a masterclass in pharmacology that holds the absolute keys to human memory and perception.
And it leaves me with this one final thought, something I haven't been able to shake since reading the source material. If scopolamine can completely erase your brain's ability to record new memories, essentially unplugging the hard drive while your physical body continues to walk, talk, and interact with the world around you, where does your conscious self actually reside during those lost hours? Are we simply a collection of our recorded memories, or is there you experiencing that terrifying delirium that simply gets permanently, quietly deleted by morning? Something to think about. Catch you on the next deep dive.